Hello and welcome back to America Weekend. I have quite a great treat in store for you now. Academy Award winner Shirley MacLaine has appeared in more than 50 films, has won 3 Emmys, 10 Golden Globes, and won that Oscar for Best Actress for the film Terms of Endearment. She's received numerous honors in her field. Shirley is also a New York Times bestselling author and has released her new book, Above the Line, My Wild Oats Adventure, which is available now, about her intense and humorous experience shooting the movie Wild Oats. And I had the opportunity to speak to Miss MacLaine about the book, about the film, and about her really interesting experiences. I asked Shirley to take me back to when she was offered the role in the film Wild Oats and what happened then.
Oh, my God. Oh, Valerie. We talked about this 5 years before we shot, and they just couldn't raise the money. That's what's happening in independent filmmaking these days. I mean, the corporations have taken over Hollywood, and so they make branded films like, you know, Spider-Man 16 or something. And all those of us who want to do good scripts and things, we've got to do it independently. So they came to me with this, and then they couldn't get the money together. And then the script was rewritten for 5 different cities who then would have a new rebate program. It's quite a history that is not pretty. Ended up in the Canary Islands because they had a good rebate program, and we got extra money for the below-the-line budget. Long time coming.
It certainly was. And your agent apparently said, don't do it.
That's right. Everybody told me. I even went to a couple of psychics, and they said, of course, don't do it. There's no money. Anyway, I wanted to go. I don't know why. I think I wanted to have an adventure that I wasn't even sure what it would be. And I realized when I got there that I was on the Canary Islands, which I thought to be the remnants of Atlantis. So there I was, back in the stuff that really interests me. And then I began to have past life memories of having lived in Atlantis while we're trying to make this film for nothing. Quite an adventure, honestly. And then the filmmaking process was so funny. I mean, they would call me in and say, don't come to work today because we can't pay the cab driver. Stuff like that.
It sounds like a madcap musical.
It is. Well, I don't know if you want music with it. You couldn't make it that weird. But it was a wonderful experience in the lack of focus on materialism.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this feeling of being drawn to a location, to some place, I've actually had that feeling and that experience before. I cannot explain it. I don't understand it, but I've had it. So, Ms. MacLaine, does that sort of explain the feeling that you had about this location, that you just had to get there?
Mm-hmm. That's right. And I knew I should start taking notes. I had no idea I was going to write about it. Of course, everyone was taking notes because the experience was so weird and so funny and so impossible. And the crew was from Spain, and many of them had read my book, The Camino, where I did the Santiago de Compostela trek. I walked across Spain. They knew I did it when I was 65, and they so appreciated that I had done it that they hung out and came to me and said, we're doing this even though we're not getting paid like we should. We're going to do this because you're hanging in there. So I learned a lot about how people feel creatively, even if they don't get paid like they should. And we deferred the money. When it came time to, okay, we just can't go any further, they asked us to defer, Jessica Lang and Demi Moore and me, and we deferred. So it was our decision. It wouldn't have been any money anyway, but so we just were nice people and did it.
So when you got to the Canary Islands, did you have an immediate attraction to the area, or was it something that came slowly upon you?
Well, you know, the advertisement of Iberia Airlines was the only airline that flies to the lost continent of Atlantis. So I was woken up to this fact as soon as I got on the plane. And so then, yes, I began to look at it seriously. And then during the shoot, we began to feel, you know, we couldn't adjust to the time change. We couldn't adjust to the energy. A couple of people would pick up a glass and it would shatter in their hands. Memories came back to everybody. I'm not sure what they were. I remember mine. And then I began looking at the news seriously as a horror show and kind of was reminded, look out, you world, now, because Atlanta sank because of its ways, and you're gonna have a problem. People, wake up.
I don't know a lot about Atlantis, but I do know that there are four locations that people think is where it exists. One is where you were, Greece, Cyprus, and someplace else. What did you know about Atlantis before you arrived?
Not very much. I mean, I had read Plato and the Ruminations of Socrates and so forth, and they absolutely believed that it existed. Then I did a lot of channeling with people who were there. I mean, the whole channeling discussion is something else that takes another show. But most of the material that came out of the different channelers coincided with each other. So I knew that stuff, and then all of the people who live there are positive in their memory pattern that they lived in Atlantis. So I began first on the plane reading the ad from Iberia, and then being in the environment, it was, golly, very provocative to look at it more seriously, which I did.
So here you are on this island. You're having an amazing experience. It's madcap adventure. You're thinking about this book. I guess I should ask you, what is the film Wild Oats about?
Two women who have trouble with the men in their lives, and they go off on a lark to enjoy themselves, and they go to the Canary Islands, literally. And we shot in a hotel called Locasan, which is a wonderful resort hotel, and it was product placement in the film. So you get to see the Canary Islands and all the reason that the tourists go there through the eyes of the film.
It sounds wonderful. It sounds like a great film. And that's coming out at some point this year?
I don't know. We don't know. Again, we have no idea if the film will ever be released. I don't know.
Well, the important thing is you were there, you had these experiences, you wrote the book. You've obviously been speaking about these experiences before. So, Ms. McLean, I'm wondering, when did you realize, I've been on this planet before, I've experienced life before. When did you have this epiphany and realized all of this?
Oh, no, I thought I started this when I was about 10. Actually, I had my first past life recall. I was about 7. And the family, we went on a tour of Virginia, because I'm from Virginia, and it's such a historical place. And we were looking at the grounds of part of the Civil War. And I was on a little mound of dirt. And suddenly I felt like I was a soldier. And I actually had a rifle in my hands, in my arms. It was absolutely clear. And don't know who I was, what I was doing, what side I was on, or anything. But it was, I was there. First time it happened to me.
Right, right. And back on the Canary Islands, when you were there and you were experiencing all these mystical incidences happening, like the shattering glass and the shared experiences, do you have a clear moment when you realized you had been there before?
Sure. And I write about it. It's there. Actually, I had more of the experiences when I got back home and had written the book and didn't actually know why. I had a terrible misalignment in my neck and then had to do decompressive exercises in water. And it was returning back to the water that I had so many past life Atlantean experience recalls. How do you say what is your imagination and what is real? Life is, you're imagining it. It's like Einstein said, there's nothing more important than imagination. It's everything. So I just thought, okay, I'm going to write all this down because it felt like real. It felt absolutely, I had a third dimensional reality experience.
It sounds fascinating. It's all in the book. And before I let you go, last question. I saw you with Matt Lauer recently, and you said you don't like to be in the limelight. You like to be alone, and you like to travel. Best experience ever for you?
Oh, probably Africa, being on a photographic safari. Oh, my God. In fact, one of my dreams is to live, I guess, on a game farm with the animals, and I can go out and be among them every day. Loved it. I never will forget that.
It sounds amazing. Well, I want to thank you for your time, Ms. McLean. Good luck with the book and with the film when it eventually comes out.
That's funny. Okay, thanks, Valerie.
Award-winning actress, author Shirley McLean with me, Valerie Smaldone, on America Weekend on the Envision Radio Network.
Now, cheap psych tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. How much privacy do mom and dad need? And how do you teach your child to respect your privacy? Well, here's the how in the developmental science of it.
I can see you naked anytime I want.
To protect both parent and child, start early and establish a rule about closed doors. Now, it may sound simplistic, but teach your child how to knock on doors. Also, make sure to add a no shouting through the door corollary. Reward when the rule is honored and impose consequences when the door is opened without permission, and make sure your child knows they'll be able to spend time with you later. What's the cheap psychological trick? This simple rule, followed by quality time with mom or dad, makes it easier for a child to tolerate a closed door and their separation from you. Check out my book, Cheap Psychological Tricks for Parents, at drbuff.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 888-359-MY-TV.
Order in the court.
This is attorney Jay Coleman with The Final Verdict. Recently, Julie received a parking ticket, but she couldn't figure out why. She pulled straight into a marked stall and left plenty of room on either side. And there were no parking meters or warning signs on the street. What do you think Julie did wrong? The final verdict after this.
Just because you don't have time to read a book doesn't mean you can't enjoy stories about artists and groups that you love. To discover a whole new world of audiobooks and hear the stories that made the music, visit happylandaudio.com. That's happylandaudio.com.
Julie didn't pull far enough into the parking stall. In some states, your car must be within 12 inches or less from the curb. Other states, it's 18 inches. In Julie's case, snow had built up and she couldn't even see the curb. But snowbanks are not a valid excuse. She still has to pay the fine. And that's the final verdict.